RunDNA has an incredible range of running and walking footwear, apparel and accessories, catering for anyone who is looking for the right shoe and fit. They're trusted by podiatrists and physiotherapists right across Adelaide. The RunDNA fitter's advice is second to none. So if it's time for new walkers or runners, you can find RunDNA, 20 Manton Street, Hindmarsh, or the other location, 391 Fullerton Road at Fullerton. Both stores open 7 days a week, plenty of off-street parking. You can find them online as well, rundna.com.au. If you run or walk, then you need to RunDNA.
It's Friday the 9th of May. Welcome to Hooked on Sport. In this episode, we talk showdown and chat with Eden Abbott and Beck Northcott about their history-making day in the SANFL. G'day, Hookie.
Hey, Wallace, how are you going? So excited for this weekend. It's going to be an amazing game, the showdown. So, yeah, really, really excited about it.
Okay, Saturday night game. What are you looking forward to most about it?
Well, I just think that both sides can really set up their season with a win, and both sides are going to be a little bit behind the eight ball if they lose. Port Adelaide are in 12th position with 4 wins from 8 games, but a terrible percentage because they've been on the receiving end of a couple of frightful hidings. So with their percentage, if they get behind the eight ball with wins and losses, it is going to make it more and more difficult for them. I haven't ruled them out yet. I think there's been, and we've had this conversation before, people are very, very quick to rule teams out on the strength of one or two losses. So I still think Port Adelaide, eminently possible, can make the eight. But because their percentage is so bad, they do have some challenges if they get behind the win and loss numbers. Adelaide, on the flip side, amazing result last week. Had that disappointing loss to Fremantle, but a tremendous performance last weekend in that match against Carlton where they won by 10 goals. So their percentage is very good. And with a win in showdown, they've got some tough games coming up. But it really does set their season up if they can get to 6-3 from their 9 games. So, yeah, just so much to play for. And I think that's really what adds a bit of edge to the showdown. I was thinking about it. I always preferred that the showdown was kind of like the second or third round of the year. But I do think with Gather Round, it's pushed it back to round 8 or round 9. And I think there's actually a fair bit more on it now. And I do like that part of it.
You've seen a lot of showdowns. You got any favourite memories?
Yeah, look, I do, Wallace. There's one in particular, Showdown 15, I reckon it was, that does stand out in my mind. Gary Ayres was coaching Adelaide at the time. And Port Adelaide had won 7 straight showdowns. And they were absolute morals to win 8 in a row. And I recall vividly that Port Adelaide were leading at quarter time. And Gary Ayres came out, this is one of those games at Football Park, came out and gave his players the most frightful spray at quarter time. The sort of thing you don't really see anymore in football. And it just looked like the wheels were starting to fall off at Adelaide. And the players responded. They were fantastic. And they went on and kicked, I think they only had 1 goal at quarter time and kicked something like 17 for the match. So they kicked 16 goals in the next 3 quarters. They were just irresistible. So that was a really special one. There was 2 in 2017, which sort of went against the run of play. I remember the first of the 2 showdowns, the Crows got comfortably ahead, and then Robbie Gray turned on one of his elite performances, and it was the last kick of the match. I think it was Daniel Motlop who won a contested ball at half forward and slotted through a goal to put Port Adelaide in front with only seconds remaining. And then the second showdown of that year was the Josh Jenkins snap for goal that he thought had hit the post, but the umpire gave it a goal, and Adelaide, against the run of play, won that one by 3 points. So those two were really familiar. And then probably the obvious one as well, Wallace, was the Phil Walsh game. The match that they played together after he had passed away. I have some issues with showdown and I guess the toxic nature of the rivalry, and we can talk about that if you like, but that game, the two clubs really came together and the rivalry was still there and it was very strong, but it was played in a really an emotional spirit that I think maybe lacks from showdowns a little bit. I do recall Chapman and Kosh, the chairman of the two respective clubs, arm in arm at the end of the match that was tremendously close. Scott Thompson won what became the Phil Walsh medal for that game. That was a really special game. And gee, I'd love to see the two clubs try and establish that sort of strong rivalry, but a bit more respect for each other, which I think does lack at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, the rivalry and showdown is really intense. Do you think overall it's got a little bit out of hand?
Keith Thomas is adamant that that's the case. Keith Thomas, a former Norwood player and then Port Adelaide CEO, he was very, very concerned about the nature of the rivalry. He always said that Port Adelaide and Norwood was a rivalry that was based on respect, and he just doesn't see that with the Adelaide Crows and the Port Adelaide Power rivalry. And I have to agree with him. Once again, and if you remember back to August, Showdown 56, the last time these two sides met, Port Adelaide won. But it was a really feisty, spiteful game. In the lead-up, Josh Rochelli was the one who was talking about Port Adelaide supporters who had lost teeth. He was pointing to his teeth after he kicked a goal early in the game. And I just felt that game descended into something pretty spiteful and nasty right around the crowd. It turned out that the Port Adelaide mascot got punched by a young, might even be someone younger than teenage. There was some really nasty stuff in the crowd. Isaac Rankin was carried off on a stretcher and was booed off by a number of Port supporters. I'm not suggesting this is one thing, Port or Crows. This is a problem for both clubs. I've got to be honest with you, Wallace. That was a Saturday night game last year, and it was always brewing. And I don't think the two clubs did enough to try and tone it down. And in the aftermath, there was all of those investigations and apologies and mea culpas. I'm stunned that the two clubs haven't done more to try and rectify that this time around. And I do think that that is an indictment on both clubs, that this is going to be yet another Saturday night game and very, very late at 7:40. Mm-hmm. I'm really uncomfortable with it because it gives everyone that opportunity to load up on alcohol over the course of the afternoon and then really let their hair down at the football. If I was one of these two clubs in charge, if I was John Olsen or David Koch, I would have asked the AFL that this game was either a Thursday night or a Friday night where people are at work before they attend the football, or a Saturday twilight game, or a Sunday, the main afternoon Sunday time slot, just to take a little bit of the sting out of what we've seen in and amongst the crowds. I was reading an article written by Emily Ollie in the Advertiser, who said she was at that game, and she described it as AFL Armageddon. It was just that spiteful and nasty. And I feel like, look, hopefully I'm wrong, but I feel like we're going to have more problems this coming Saturday night with a 7:40 start. And I just reckon that it is incumbent upon the clubs to start to work towards trying to find a healthy form of rivalry between the two teams, because right now it's not that.
So what do you see as the future of the showdown?
Yeah, look, this is maybe Collingwood, Essendon, Anzac Day aside. I think this can be the best game of home and away football in the year. It's traditionally been very, very close. We're at 56 matches. They've won 28 apiece. I mean, that is incredible. Nothing like what you see in Perth or Sydney or the Q Clash up in Brisbane, where they're very, very lopsided results. I was thinking about this, Wallace, and I know Damien Barrett was attacked because he suggested that this game should potentially be moved to the MCG. But I'm starting to think that, look at what the NFL's doing, where they move games for premiership points, not just away from the home venue, but they move them internationally. We've seen it happen with State of Origin, where New South Wales versus Queensland play a three-leg series and the third leg is up for sale. And I reckon once every 2 or 3 years that one of these games should be up for sale. So make sure you're covering your costs that you're losing from your ticket sales for whether it's a Crows or a Port Adelaide home game. But could this be sold to the MCG and 80,000 people turn up on a Thursday night or a Friday night? Could this game be sold for premiership points somewhere outside of Australia? So we've seen games that have been maybe not all that successful in China, and games maybe not all that successful in New Zealand. But could this be something like the games that the NFL is doing by going to Las Vegas? Could we see a preseason match? But when I say preseason, the first game of the year played, let's say, at the Oval in London in March. So I just wonder whether that is workable and whether you would get the right-sized crowd. I honestly think you would. I think that there is a lot of scope to be doing that with the showdown, and that's what I would be starting to think about. Maybe not for the next 2 or 3 years, but that's something that I'd be working towards, whether you could sell one of these games for huge money into a really big primetime spot, whether that was outside of Australia or, you know, the MCG or the SCG or something like that.
I like the way you're thinking, Hookie. After the break, Eden Abbott and Beck Norcott join us to talk about their history-making day in the SANFL.
If you're enjoying this podcast, I'd encourage you to take a listen to Beyond the Club. It's a project I've been working on with Flinders University. Now, I co-host it with Professor Sam Elliott, and we break down all the latest research on how to maximise the experience of junior and club athletes. There's a range of resources, special guests, and cutting-edge info on how you can make your club a safer, happier place for your kids and their club mates. Beyond the Club, wherever you get your podcasts. Well, joining us now on the show are a pair of history makers, the first ever all-women commentary team for a South Australian football game. Beck Norcott and Eden Abbott have both joined us following on from their duo calling the West Adelaide versus Eagles game a couple of weeks ago. Beck, Eden, welcome to Hooked on Sport.
Hello, Ben. It's great to be on. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
How was it? How did you find calling a game together? I mean, this shouldn't really be a thing, should it? But it kind of is a thing. How did you find it working together, the sisterhood together?
Honestly, I just was so excited. I think, like, I had so much energy. Like, there was just something about it. As soon as we started working together and, you know, we were calling a women's game as well, it just felt like we just brought all these women together to celebrate women's footy. And I know it's hard to describe, but I just, like, my heart was racing. I just thought, like, this is so cool that we're doing this together.
Yeah, I completely agree. It was just like the sounds of the game calling women's sport. It just felt so right. I can't even explain the connection between us two. Like, yes, we commentate with male commentators and it's great and everything. Not like we don't have that connection with them. But this was just another, like, level and power. And it's surreal to think that 2025 was the first year this has happened.
Yeah. It is kind of like that, isn't it? That in my mind, I'm thinking we shouldn't be necessarily making such a big issue of this, but it's you're still the first, and it is very, very cool. You've sort of touched on it, but I am interested in how you found the chemistry worked between you. I mean, there is commentary duos or tandems that spend years and years and years working together to, I guess, create that level of synchronicity, if you like. How did you find working together for the first time for you two? How did that play out?
It kind of just came very naturally. I mean, like, we've met briefly before, but, you know, never, you know, we hadn't talked a whole lot. So you are sometimes a bit nervous about how it's going to go when you work with someone for the first time, but just instantly, like, felt comfortable. We had a bit of a chat about, you know, how to, you know, change over in between the call and that kind of thing. It just ended up flowing so naturally. I'll get you to talk about it as well, Eden, but it just felt like, you know, we were having a chat. We'd known each other for years and been working together for years. It all just sort of came together.
Yeah, and as you opened up the broadcast, I remember you saying, it's a Good Friday. It was literally Good Friday. And it's like, yes, this, and that was just like instantly from there, the sparks, like, between us. It's so strange to even describe it, but it just all connected. And I think just the way, as females, sometimes it can be struggle playing the game, or people understanding that women have a place to be playing the game. So especially calling, it was nice to have familiarity and someone else's voice and passion. Like, Beck's passion and knowledge for the women's SANFL W is unparalleled to anyone else too.
Eden, I will start with you here. How did you get into play-by-play commentary? I mean, it's kind of like become the stereotype, isn't it, that a woman is the boundary rider, or it fills that void, and that's become very stereotypical position. But I'll start with you, and I'll be interested in your thoughts as well, Beck. What was the driver to get into play-by-play commentary in particular?
So I actually stumbled upon it on the SANFL website. I was looking for work experience as I was studying journalism in uni, and I was just like, oh, I'm going to register my interest, and the next day or straight away I heard back, and it's like, can you do this game next weekend? And I'm like, oh God, I don't have the credentials. I don't know really much about it. But I met John Nankerville, got to see what he did that weekend, and I just found it so fascinating. And it's probably, I don't know if Beck agrees, but you got to throw yourself in the deep end. That's the only way you learn, is by getting on the cans and literally just going for it. You learn as you do, and also shadowing a couple of the commentators. But it was probably 2021 when I stumbled upon that form.
Mm. Beck?
Yeah, so I think I wanted to, you know, just avoid going into, yeah, sort of that stereotypical box of, you know, women doing special comments, boundary writing, that thing, you know, like you said. And, you know, there's obviously great women that do that, and, you know, they do an awesome job. But I think there's definitely a place for more women to do play-by-play. And I, you know, I love sort of describing the game and what's happening. And, you know, one of the first games that I did, like, it wasn't Sanford, it was just my own local club in the amateur league, and, you know, I was talking about a lot of my friends, and so I was so excited to, you know, use their names and, you know, say, you know, so-and-so did this, and, you know, she kicked a goal, and, you know, I could really bring myself into it because I knew the players. And, you know, I wasn't always super confident about it, I think, in Sandful, but I remember really distinctly at the start of last season, I did a game with Paul Bonds, or like Bonds from SEN, and he said, you know, what do you want to do, Beck? And I said, well, I really do want to focus on this play-by-play. And he said, well, you do it then. Like, it, you know, it was even just having someone like him say, well, no, like, you know, do that, like, just have a go at it. So I think it's also just having a bit of belief in yourself that you can do that sort of bit more, you know, specialised role.
Yeah, Paul Bonds, a friend of the show, good mate of mine, and honestly can call any sport. Very good with cricket, very good with football, yes. Does a great job with basketball as well. I've got a lot of time for Paul. Do either of you have a role model? Look, Kelly Underwood is the obvious one, if you like, but is there someone that you've not necessarily focused your own broadcast style around, but someone who you maybe have watched, observed, and taken pointers from?
I really like John Casey. He's probably one of my favourite commentators just to listen to. Like, I've always admired him, and I like how he can go between sports, and, you know, he just sounds like an expert on all of them. In terms of females, I really admire Alison Mitchell, and she does the cricket. I really like the way that she speaks and gets her point across as well. So, you know, I sort of tend to take a little bit more from other sports as well, sort of not always just footy. Like, you know, I like Jason Richardson, what he does with racing and his kind of energy. So I like to kind of pull, you know, this person, I like their knowledge, this person, I like their energy. And I really just, yeah, like to watch and pull different things from different commentators.
What about you, Eden?
Yeah, I'd probably say, even looking at cricket, Isha Guha. Like, for me, she's incredible. And looking back towards Bruce McAvaney, Dennis Cometti, I mean, they're just the sounds of the game. Like, how could you not want to be like them and take inspiration? The way they describe the play and everything is like poetry in motion. But a bit of everyone, especially the early days, John Nankerville, the way he can remember players and player IDs, unreal. Phil Aspinall, looking at all of his preparation and how he gets suited up for a game. So all of the Sandful commentators, especially, they've probably, their advice, John Casey, yeah, like you said, Chris Kendall, they've all been there in the wings supporting us.
It's admirable, I find, that both of you have listed commentators from other sports, because I think that's the one thing we don't do very well as Australian footy fans, is look outside the box and start to think about how other sports like baseball or basketball broadcast their sport, and looking outside of Australia as well and going to the US and having a look at the way that other sports are broadcast. The other thing I think is beautiful, Alison Mitchell and Isha Guha, who you both identified, just such an efficiency of broadcasting. They don't waste words. They don't use 10 words when they only need to use 4 or 5. And I think in particular in the medium that you're in, which is television, being prepared to let the picture speak for themselves from time to time and just adding to it with the colour of your own language is really important. And they're beautiful examples of that. You talked about research. Has that been something that you've... I think you do a little bit, you want a little bit. It's like Chinese food, isn't it? You have a bit and then you really feel like you want to get more and more and more and develop more and more knowledge. Do you find you're buried in research and watching old games in the lead up to whoever you're calling this coming week?
Yeah, you know, you sort of try your best not to, like, overload yourself, I think, as well. You know, there's sort of, you know, a fine line between not enough and, you know, too much. And, you know, you've got all this stuff in your head that you've thought about, and you know probably 90% of it you're never going to use. So, you know, it's about trying to, you know, think about some really solid things that are going to matter in the broadcast. You know, I try and start out with players that are really doing well at the moment for both teams and making sure I can identify them really strongly. And then, yeah, sort of trying to pick out things that people might find interesting as well. But I also don't want to sort of go overboard, and I just want to also just talk about the footy as well and what's happening in front of me. So yeah, it's kind of, yeah, I don't know how you feel about it as well, Eden, but you can sort of, yeah, go and do pages and pages and pages, but at the end of the day people also just want to know who's got the ball.
Yeah, I'd say probably player ID is the most difficult, especially because I do a lot of the under-18s, sometimes under-16s development league. So especially with the under-18s boys, they could be signed up with, like, college, have scholarships. So you could have literally 15 new players different to the week before. So trying to learn their names or their numbers to their names, because most of the time you don't know what they look like because they don't have profile pictures like the senior men's do. And so you're really relying on them, the numbers especially, and especially when they kick a goal, for them to show you your number, their number, so you know who's actually kicked the goal.
This is an audio medium, so does it work? You need a little bit of this from the from the players, don't you, to turn around and point their number to you, just to make things little bit simpler. Is it something that as you develop in this craft, you want to bring more of your personality? You made the point that, you know, it's really important that people just know who's got the footy. But at the same time, do you want to sort of develop it? You talked about some of the greats, Cometti and McAvaney. I mean, their capacity to bring themselves to the broadcast is an innate skill. They are wonderful to listen to. Is that what you'd like to be able to develop?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I would, yeah, definitely like to bring a bit more of that. And, you know, I think I can get, you know, a bit in my head sometimes and just trying to, you know, get this right, get it going. But I think especially when I was working with Eden, I think just the way that we bounced off each other, it helped me to sort of bring more of myself out as well. So I think it depends who you're working with as well. And because especially in that game with Eden, I just felt like I could bring myself out a little bit more, and I got a little bit more excited. And I think I, you know, said things that, or not that were like silly or anything, but just, you know, let myself get a bit more excited and bring out my passion a bit more, because especially with the Sandful W, there's girls in some of the teams I've, you know, played with or played against, and or just know through footy. And so if they do something good, I tend to get really excited for them personally. So, you know, I do try and, you know, bring that out a little bit as well, but then without feeling like I'm, you know, being too biased towards anyone either.
Yeah, I'd agree. When you feel more comfortable, you feel like you can be more yourself. And I think with every game, I try to make like a storyline, if it's the underdogs or what's going on, trying to create that storyline and then bring myself and the co-commentator into. I think it's a nice personal touch because you are commentating footy. It's a bit of fun, like the boys or girls out there are having fun on the field too. So you better have fun for 2 hours, 2.5 hours that you're calling. So, yeah, it's just about trying to not tiptoe over that boundary where it's too far and too much, but because you need to realise that it is about the game. It's not about you. But that's just a common fact.
Probably why I'll never be a commentator. I'd make it all about me. Just to wrap things up, guys, Beck, just tell us where you're broadcasting on the weekend. What game have you got?
I'm actually doing an amateur league this weekend, so I'm out at Salisbury North doing the men's out there. So a bit of a trip for me, but they've got a great facility out there. So I sort of go a bit between, Sandful and do some of the Adelaide Footy League if I'm not doing Sandful. So I'm going out there this weekend. So brand new lot of players to see and talk about.
And you, Eden?
I'll be working this weekend, so unfortunately none for me, but hopefully next weekend.
Very good. Just to wrap things up, you both made the point about how you sort of stumbled into it in a way. If you're a young woman, young man, and you're thinking about getting into this, what's maybe the one bit of advice you'd give over and above just sign up? What's, I guess, step number one of getting into this? You sort of talked about Eden jumping in off the deep end, but what's the one thing you would think, if you're going to do this, I would make sure that this is a part of my prep?
I'd say there's a lot of external noise. So just realising why you want to do it. And in 5 years' time, I would like to thank myself for signing up and just doing it. So kind of thinking about your future self in a way and where you want to be and just following that path, because there is a lot of external noise. It's not easy. And the fact that we're the first two in 2025, it's obviously been a challenge, but we've been keeping at it. So just thinking about yourself in the future and what it means by signing up today.
Yeah, I think just a bit of, self-belief. I remember, looking at the sort of form to sign up for Sandful and thinking, I could never do that, I wouldn't be good enough to do that. And then it's just, you're backing yourself. I had to think, I love footy. I do know things about footy. And, if I prepare and do all the right things, there's no reason why I can't do what all these other people are doing in commentary. So I think it's just getting past a little bit of that, self-doubt or like imposter syndrome quite thing, feeling like, should I be here or not? But just, just backing yourself and your knowledge especially.
The pair of you, I'm tremendously impressed. I wish you all the very best with your future. I do hope that we never have to do another podcast on women doing play-by-play footy commentary, because it just becomes a normal part of life. I'm looking forward to seeing you progress. It's Showdown 57 this weekend, and I'm looking forward, I reckon, to, let's say, around about Showdown 77, when it's Northcott and Abbott, the commentary team, leading it out. Wouldn't that be something really special?
Let's be flying.
Aim high.
I love that.
Thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate the chat.
That's awesome. You. Thanks so much, Ben. This was so fun.
Awesome. Thank you.
That's a wrap on another episode of Hooked on Sport. A special thanks to our guests Eden Abbott and Beck Northcott. Quick reminder to follow us and leave a review if you enjoy what you hear. Your support helps Hooked on Sport reach even more sports-minded people just like you. I'm Wallace Long, and we look forward to your company next week on Hooked on Sport.